Blog Talk Radio.
How's it going, everyone? I'm doing very well. I seem to be having a little technical difficulties on my end. Can you hear me? I'm doing very well, and how are you doing this week? Can you hear me again? Okay, I don't know why, but I can't hear anything coming through my end. It would appear that is the case.
Now.
Oh, there you are. Okay.
Oh, there you are.
You
can
went
you hear
silent
me now?
For a few minutes, too.
I was talking the whole time.
No, you actually went silent on the switchboard for a minute. But we should be all set now.
I hate technology. So I don't know what exactly was heard or what was said. But we had talked last week about the llamas who were killed. Do you remember this?
I do.
The latest information I've heard that is that it was probably two rogue husky dogs that were doing it, because a farmer or someone was shot a couple of husky dogs that was trying to harm his cows. If it was them, they also got a couple of small donkeys that were a few miles from where the llamas were killed. So we'll keep monitoring that and see if we can find any or get some answers for sure, one way or the other.
Yeah, so but it appears that it was a couple of rogue huskies at this point.
So, have we heard from Gene yet?
Gene is in the switch room right now, and we're just waiting to introduce him on.
Good heavens, don't make that man wait. He's cryptid SI royalty. Let that man on the show.
All right, without further ado, Gene, brother, can you hear us?
I can hear you loud and clear.
All right,
how
you doing,
buddy? Don't put that man in the switchboard, or don't put him on hold or queue in the switchboard. That Gene is cryptid SI royalty. You let him right through.
You guys doing all right tonight?
We are. How about you, brother?
I'm doing great. Had a good church service this morning. Went visited some friends, just had a big supper, and just kick back relaxing now.
Well, I love the sound of that church and that big supper.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when you got an Italian wife, you eat good.
Well, I believe I hear tell that your wife cooks well anyway.
She does.
Well,
I told her well.
Glad to have you on the show tonight. It's been a while since we talked. Last time you and I talked, I believe that you had some activity literally in your backyard. Have you had anything else?
Yeah, actually, well, I've sent you those pictures. For those that don't know, I've got some tomato cages at the edge of the woods. And I planted some muscadine seeds to climb the tomato cages. Well, I went outside one day, and all the tomato cages had been pulled up out of the ground and laid in a pile. So from that area, there's a trail that goes down into the woods. And I started walking it, and I noticed there's big rocks laid, big white rocks laid in the middle of the trail. Well, just down below the rocks, there's a tree, or a small tree, rather, that's been driven into the ground at an angle about 4 to 5 inches deep. And to make sure it wasn't just something growing, I pulled it out and checked it and then put it back in the way I found it. And then 4 nights ago, something smacked the house. I thought somebody had slammed the door, but I got up and it wasn't anything. Well, then it did it the next night. And that's not happened since. But there's a spot down in the woods, I call it the bottoms. And at times I can hear a deep moaning sound coming from that area. And I saw some eye shine on a couple of occasions and things like that. We've got some deer around here, so there's a readily available food source. And then I've been, from time to time, putting out table scraps. They've been disappearing, which that could be anything. But, yeah, I've had a few little interesting things happen.
Well, you're definitely down in an area where there's a lot of wilderness.
Oh, yeah, by the way, the crow flies, I'm 20 minutes from the Cherokee National Forest.
Yeah, so there's certainly opportunity for there to be a Bigfoot presence, a dogman presence. I think there's even it's not very far from where Scott Carpenter, your other research partner, got some dogman activity, isn't it?
That's about 45 minutes away where he got that. I've been to the area where he filmed it. And actually, we had gone in I'm not sure exactly when it was he shot that video, but we went into the same area and collected samples that were used for the Ketchum DNA project.
Very, very nice. So anybody that don't know Gene is a legitimate researcher who's added a great deal to the field. You were very instrumental in the Carter Farm investigation, weren't you, Gene?
I've been there since pretty much day one. Mary Green, who, rest her soul, is the one that got me started researching. I'd had a little episode at my place a few years ago and contacted her about it. And after that, she started taking me into her areas and showing me what she knew. And that opened the door, to meet other researchers and work with them. And when she found out how close I lived to the Carter Farm at the time, she asked me to start going down and, doing some field work down there. And I'd say in 2 years, I've probably been on that farm a good 100,
125
times. Wow.
That's a lot of investigation. Now, we joined you over the, or it was late in the fall or early in the fall, I can't remember, it was early in the fall, actually, that we joined you down there and you took us to the farm to look around, and man, that's kind of a scary looking place at night.
It is, especially the area we were in. Now, since I'd started doing the research down there, a lot's changed. Of course, Janice moved away. Her portion of the farm has been sold, and a lot of it's grown up. But there's still activity going on there. Now, I don't think it's the same group that was there before, just from what I've heard from the people that are living there now. But they're having activity again. They've had one legitimate sighting and several instances where they've heard, you know, chatter out in their yard and something walking around the house, smacking the house and looking through the windows and stuff.
Now you sent me some pictures also of an incident in the corn where something had been eaten and stacking corn cobs.
Yeah, that was where I was heading next. The gentleman that bought the farm from Janice.
Gene, I will link those pictures that you sent me and the ones of your tomato steaks to this episode so people can see those.
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
Elijah, you heard that. Get on it.
All right. I'll make that happen sometime after the show.
But yeah, it's, for the neighbor's son to come down there and take them back into the cornfield to show them that, and then the footprints that they found while they were out there, you know, there's still activity going on.
Now, in case there's anyone who doesn't know what the Carter Farm incident is, Gene, is there any way that you can start at point A and spoon feed everyone through the case?
Okay, the Carter Farm is it's a farm in East Tennessee. Originally, the farm was owned by the Sue Hicks family, which if you don't know who Sue Hicks is, that is who Johnny Cash wrote A Boy Named Sue about. And he was a judge. Janice's grandfather, Robert Carter, bought the farm back in 1946. They were clearing some timber, and they cut one tree, and he said he saw something jump up and take off. Well, the tree landed on it. So he went over. At the time, he thought it was a feral child. It was all covered in hair, the whole nine yards. So he took it back to his house to try to, you know, treat it, let it recover. Asked the neighbors, nobody had a child missing or anything. Nobody ever heard of it. Well, they said it started sweating and almost tore the house apart. So they put it in a barn stall. Well, that night the parents ripped the side of the barn out to get the baby out. Well, after that, the baby or the juvenile started following Mr. Carter around the farm. And it became pretty much a habituation case because he would go, he fed them in the same spot at the same time every single day. And if he didn't feed them, then they would come to the house, beating on the house and stuff. And that juvenile turned out to be Fox. Well, over the years, he kept that up until he passed away, and Janice moved back to the farm. Her uncle was living there at the time and had a run-in with Fox in the basement. And there's pictures in the book. If anybody can get a hold of a copy of it, it's 50 Years of Bigfoot, Tennessee Chronicles of Coexistence, to where the things in the cellar, the canned food in the cellar, all the jars have been busted, you know, all that. And Janice...
Excuse me, Gene. The audiobook is available to listen to on YouTube, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, I wasn't aware there was an audio version.
Yeah, I think someone has put it on YouTube as an audiobook, and they may have even linked the pictures and stuff to the... or put a link so that people could follow and see the pictures that are in the book. That's 50 years with Bigfoot, right?
Yes, 50 years with Bigfoot. But, I mean, over the years, Janice, you know, she would follow them. She would climb trees and listen to them talk, chatter, just observe what they were doing. And as she got older, after her grandfather died, they started hanging around the house more. And it went on until she moved away. But it's a classic habituation case.
And the big feet, do they tend to take a more aggressive, violent approach, or do they just seem to do that every now and again, or were they more friendly in nature?
They were more friendly. The only aggressive thing that I ever witnessed was I got growled at one night. We got to be friends with Janice and her family, so we would go down, you know, do some field work, and then hang around the house after dark just talking and stuff. Well, I went out to get my daughter's diaper bag out of the car. Janice had a collie that would follow me all over the place. It followed me out till it got to the end of Janice's van and then just froze. Would not take another step. So I walked on to the car, and as I'm getting the diaper bag out, I heard a growl. And the growl sounded just like the one in Ron Moorhead's Sierra sounds. So
that's a scary thing to hear for sure.
Well, I stopped what I was doing and just listened for a minute, and it growled again. Well, then I just started talking to it. Got the diaper bag out of the car, walked back to the house, told Janice what happened. So we went outside with a light, and she's shining it, and behind the barn you can see two eyes come out from behind the barn. They would come out, go back in, come out, go back in. And they were a good 6-7 feet off the ground. And later that night, after we had got home, Janice called. They had left to go to the store. When they came back in, the lights hit one of them down next to the shed. So she walked down there, and she got growled at. And from what I understand, the female, Nikki, had just had a baby.
So it wasn't so much they were being aggressive, but they were being protective of the child.
Exactly. Because that is the only aggressive thing I ever had happen on that farm in the 2 years that I was down there on a regular basis.
Now, how many Bigfoots would you say was in that group or pod? Or I'm not even sure what you would classify a group of Bigfoot as.
I just call them family groups. There were five. There was Fox. He was the matriarch, or the patriarch. Then you had Nikki. She was a young female. You had Bo, who was a young male, and then Squeaky. And then Squeaky was a small juvenile that had a club foot, because we followed his tracks in the snow one day, and his right foot was severely misshapen.
Now, wasn't there a Sheba?
That was Fox's mate. She had already passed by the time I started going down there.
Well, that's very sad.
And then, since then, Fox has passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Got
a
quick
question for you,
James. Sure.
Since you said he had a club foot, since there isn't just a readily steady supply of big feet around, do you suppose that could have been the subject of inbreeding and some type of that could have caused the deformation?
You know, I'm not real sure. I know that they weren't a full related family group. I know Bo joined the group. Nikki, I think, was the offspring of Fox and Sheba. But now Bo, he entered the territory and ended up joining the group. So I don't think it was inbreed.
Probably just a natural deformation.
That's what I'm thinking. Either that or he had gotten injured somehow. There was a lot of equipment around on the farm.
It's just a theory because I know, like, in the Boggy Creek case, they found footprints around there. There was three-toed, like it was deformed as well.
Right, and there's been instances in several locations where they found, you know, three-toed tracks, too.
Yeah.
But just with Squeaky's case, just the way the footprint looked, I'm thinking that he had gotten injured.
Well, it's not unlikely they could have, you know, stepped wrong or done something to themselves out there because it is rough terrain over in East Tennessee.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, if they were traveling back and forth to the mountains, I mean, this place is really close to, like I said, Cherokee National Forest, and they could have easily traveled, you know, back and forth to the mountains without being seen at all.
Now, Mary Green's other research location up in East Tennessee, have they reported any activity recently in that region at all?
Not that I'm aware of. Of course, now I've not talked to anybody that's working that area. But as far as I know, there's not any.
It seems like most of the research is kind of just died off over there.
Yeah, kind of. There's, it seems like it goes in phases. I mean, ever since, if we're talking about the same place where we met last year.
Yes, we are.
Okay. That one, I know one of the big prominent groups went in there.
Taking guns, if I'm not mistaken.
They were taking guns. They were driving down the road. They were shooting into the woods, making all kinds of racket, and just being complete morons.
Now, was this group, and I'm not going to call names or the program, but this was a televised group, wasn't it?
Yes.
I thought so.
And that's, I'm telling you what Mary Green told me, that, you know, people witnessed them driving down the road, shooting into the woods, and just being total morons about the whole thing. And it really put a damper on the research in that area because they got a lot more elusive and a lot more aggressive.
And for those who don't know, is there any way you could give just a brief background of who Mary Green was, Gene?
Mary Green was the Tennessee Bigfoot lady. Sweetheart of a woman. She was like a mom to a lot of us. She, when she moved in to that area where she was doing her research, her and her son had went out and was just walking in the woods. And she had heard about them before. She knew about them because of where she lived previously. They had a lot of encounters there. So one followed them out of the woods one day. And the more it happened, she just started diving in head first to research. And she had some pretty groundbreaking stuff. I mean, she was a legitimate researcher. A lot of people have came out and called her a crackpot and stuff like that. Well, those people are just misinformed.
I've also heard her compared to Diane Fossey.
She has been compared to Diane Fossey, and that I agree with that 100% because she did, especially one of the Bigfoot down there that was highly aggressive, she seemed to tame him a little.
And Elijah, if you don't know who Diane Fossey is, she was the woman that the movie and the book Gorillas in the Mist was written about.
Oh, gotcha.
Yes.
Yeah, you got
she
a copy
was
kind of
like a Jane, kind of like a Jane Goodall.
Yep, I would agree with that too.
But yeah, Mary was a sweetheart of a lady. She would give you the shirt off her back. She's taken so many people out on their first, you know, research trips, and been a mentor to people all over the world.
One of our first trips, we went out with Mary. She called
one up
close to the car.
Yeah, she was always very friendly to us.
She was to everybody. I think a lot of the ridicule that she went through over the book, it really hurt her. That was, I mean, the book, from what I've experienced on the farm, that book is 100% legitimate. And I've seen the notebooks where Janice wrote down their language. As she, you know, as she took it, she would write down a word she heard them say and look it up, and a lot of it turned out to be Native American words and from different tribes. Now, I've heard Fox speak one time. It was right before the book came out, and we had went down to help her post the property. And we're walking by a little pine thicket, and Fox said hello to us. Now, it was really deep, really guttural, came from his chest. Didn't come from his throat like us. It came from his chest. But it was a clear hello. As Mr. Carter had taught them some English.
Wow. Now, didn't Russian researcher Igor, I can't pronounce his last name, but didn't he go there to the farm as well?
Igor Bortsev.
Yes,
he did. As a matter of fact, I had the pleasure of meeting him down there at the farm.
I met him one time briefly.
And Igor he's obsessed with the subject, and rightly so. I mean, he was the one that found the skull of Xana's son, Kvit. And for those who don't know anything about the story of Xana, she was a Russian wild woman that had been captured. They kept her in a cage. Unfortunately, some of the men at the compound had their way with her, and she got pregnant. Well, her baby, she was taking it down to the creek, washing it, and it developed. They got sick and died. So then it happened again, and they took the baby from her. That turned out to be Kvit. And the story is that his jaw muscles alone were so strong that you could set a man in a wooden chair, and he could grab that chair with his teeth on the back of it and lift chair and man all up just with his mouth.
Oh, my goodness, the strength they'll take.
Yes, and, you know, there's pictures online of him, and you can look, his mandible is large. And Igor followed leads, spent years, and he finally discovered the skull.
Wow.
And Igor spends a lot of time over here, too.
You know, speaking of skulls, a lady mentioned to us this week that one of her neighbors or friends had found an unusual skull that didn't look human, in the woods not far from here, and they didn't think much about it. They threw it out for the dogs to play with, and she seems to think that it might be something that we'd be really interested in. She's going to go down and try to get it from him.
I would like to see that.
I'm
definitely
pretty stoked about that myself. But if they give it to a bunch of dogs, there ain't no telling where that thing is now. But she's supposed to try to go down and get it from them.
That would be super if she could.
Yes, it would. So I am just really hoping and praying that she can come through with it.
Right. Yeah, that would be something really interesting to look into.
Now, Gene, one of our favorite topics of research recently has been the dog man phenomenon. In your experience, have you ever seen or heard anything that might give evidence to a dog man or possibly in that region of Tennessee?
Well, yeah, there's a video that Scott took. I mean, and in that video, you can clearly see a canine ear twitching. And the area that he got that video in, I used to live not 10 minutes from it. I mean, I could have walked to the area. I have had a couple of eerie experiences in there. I can't say for sure what it is, but one of those where, you know, anybody that knows me knows that I'm just core fishing. So every year when the lake would drop, I would walk the banks looking for fishing lures to refurbish. Well, I'm out there one day, and I started hearing something walking in the leaves, something heavy. And I would stop, but when I stopped, it would stop. Then when I would start walking again, so would it. And I got a real eerie feel. And it followed me all the way almost to the boat ramp. Well, Scott and I did an overnight trip out there one year. And we got some, and this is in the same area that he filmed the dog man. And we could hear something moving up closer and closer. We caught eye shine a couple of times, but there wasn't anything definitive. And we've gone in there, and, well, as a matter of fact, the day we got the samples that went for the DNA project, we had gone in, and there's one space by the trail that's just grass. Well, we'd walked in, got our samples and stuff, and out of curiosity, I was wondering if those Bigfoot were the same ones that were on the Carter farm, because by this time, Janice had moved away and sold the farm.
It would certainly be in the same area.
Yeah, really close to the same area. And so I started calling them by name. And then we start hearing this real deep moaning sound. Well, on the way back out, that area that I was talking about was just grass. Something had laid down in that spot. The grass was all, you know, mashed down, the whole nine yards, and there were all these little flowers sprinkled in the trail that wasn't there when we came in. And we looked and we found the tree that they came from, but it was a good 30 yards from where the spot was. So we walked into another area where he was leaving them apples and things like that. Well, we were playing Native American music. Well, the music stopped, and as soon as it did, a hickory nut came flying from the side and hit me in the leg. And we started hearing, you know, rustling in the leaves and stuff. So we started the music back. It stopped. But in that area, there was some, well, especially when I was growing up, there was something we called a varmint. It would bark. It made a sound like, almost like a fox barking. It was kind of a mix between a fox and a dog. And And I'd recorded it once, and my stepdad was friends with these old mountain men, and he played it for them, and none of them, they said they'd never heard anything like it before. And it could be in one spot, and in 5 seconds, I mean literally 5 seconds, be 100 yards away. But I shine at the fence at the edge of the woods. But, you know, I can't say it's a dog, man, because I'm not sure. I never saw it.
Have you ever noticed, like, as they describe it, that golden amber-colored eye shine anywhere?
Absolutely.
Right
here on my place.
That's indicative of dog, man.
I've had that here at my place before. Last year, we were sitting out in the spa, and there's a mound of dirt at the edge of the woods. Well, I kept noticing something shining up in the trees. Now, I just passed it off, you know, maybe a raccoon or something like that. But then, above the top of the dirt pile, I saw eye shine. And it would follow the contour of the dirt mound down to the ground, then come back up, and it just kept doing that. That was a reddish color. A couple of nights later is when I started seeing the golden color. And the varmint that I was talking about, that's the color eye shine we saw from it, was like a golden hue.
Nice. Man, I would really love to where you and myself and Nathan Davis and Jason Acey and Elijah could all get together and go spend a whole weekend at Land Between the Lakes up here.
That would be very great.
I would love that. That's an area I'm highly interested in. I know I've been there with you once, but it was at night. But I'd love to get in there and tromp around in the daytime because that place
It's something special. You remember that whistling we got down there?
Yes. Yes, I do.
We found our way back to that particular cemetery, so we know where that's at now.
It's a shame y'all weren't able to get that recorded the first time.
Yeah, I know. That would have been nice. But now I'm glad you guys found it because that's one I'd really like to hit. And another one is that area where the incident happened.
We know exactly where that. You know, there was allegedly two incidents, possibly a third, and we had the location of all three of them that we could go investigate.
Now that I'd definitely be on board with. I know in the video Hunt the Dog Man that Bart Nunley did, there was a lady talking about her brother riding his dirt bike back in the woods. And his father warned him not to go back there. They did find he still did it. And his sister said that she could hear his motorcycle coming. And, I mean, he had it wound up. Well, evidently, there was a dog man chasing him. And it reached out and it ripped his jeans. Well, he came down the driveway, just let his bike slide. They took off in the house. So they said something went around the house, beating and banging on it, growling, trying to get in. Well, then...
breaking things.
Yeah, and the grandmother, they said when she was coming in from the store that she would honk her horn, and that was her signal to come out and help carry in the groceries. Well, they heard her horn honking. Whatever it was, stopped. They said the dogs outside in the pen were going nuts. Well, when the dad got home, he was a cop. He went back in there, and they found pits full of animal bones. And in the same video, she talks about that she was working at a convenience store, and two of the local cops came in one night. And she was friends with them. They were regulars. Well, she said one of them sat out on the side, on the curb, and said he was literally getting sick. And the other one had blood on his uniform. Those were the two that discovered the kill site.
Yes.
So they had been called out to it, rather. Been called out to it.
Now, have you ever been to the kill site?
No, I've not been yet.
We need to get you out there. Elijah and I went with Nathan late last year, and we went down to that area, and we were blowing a dog whistle around 3 o'clock in the morning, and we began to get, like, dog noises coming from across the river. So I don't know if it was actually a dog, if we had almost lured something in. Definitely a creepy, eerie place.
Well, my thing is more interesting is at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Right. And the weird thing about that area, and you can see it in Bart's video too, is all the bunkers down in that area.
Yes, we found the bunkers as well.
You know, it kind of makes you wonder what those bunkers were actually built for.
Yeah, they don't really seem to serve a purpose. They're really dilapidated now. Time before, when we were down there with Nathan, we were doing I think Nathan called it a periscope or something like that. And someone started responding to us, telling us that there was something to the effect of a witching tree around there, and said if we wanted something to come out and visit us, to come out, then we should hoist a dead chicken up in it. Now, that sounded a little bit too much like the occult for me, and I was like, no, I think I'm going to pass on that.
Right.
But supposedly that witching tree is somewhere in the same area.
Close to like another foundation in the region or something?
Well, it's probably right there at that foundation in the woods where we found that animal skull.
Probably.
That is another thing, not trying to cut you off, but on the Carter farm?
Yes.
It wasn't unusual to find pieces of skin hanging in the trees.
Now, didn't you tell me you found a bunch of dead dogs over the time you were researching there?
We would find dogs laying in the ditch, literally crushed to death. It wasn't like hit by a car. These things were completely crushed. They were mashed flat. And we found several of them over the years. There is a picture in the book that I took. We were in what they call the tobacco patch. It's where Janice's grandfather gave Sheba the pink blanket that she had. And there's a picture of her holding it in the book. We were walking back through that area, and I looked over, and in a tree, there was a skeleton of some kind of canine. It was hung, the skull was wedged in a fork in the tree, and the rest of it was just hanging down. I'm 6'1". I stood on one of the tree roots and stretched as far as I could and could just barely touch the very last vertebra in the tail. That's how high up that thing was hung.
Well, that don't sound like it was happened by natural occurrences.
Not that high, no. But like I said, we would find pieces of skin with fur on it hanging in trees. Then again, the crushed dogs.
And they were all tend to not like dogs.
Especially the yippy ones. Every dog we found was a yippy dog. I mean, one of my dogs I found, it was a dachshund. And he wanted to stay outside. So we would let him stay outside. Well, he disappeared. We found him about a week later. He was laying under the porch. He was dead. His tongue was hanging out. And there were these huge marks around his neck. And they look like finger marks. Down on the back side of the house, in the woods, we found a teepee structure. Now, this wasn't your typical teepee. This thing was made from full-size trees, pine trees. No stumps around where they'd been cut. Now, this thing was massive. So I started concentrating a lot of my efforts right there. And I did, I made a track bed. I took a rake down there and raked the soil up, make it real loose, and then scattered leaves over it. I'd taken a stocking and filled it full of corn and sprayed vanilla on it and hung it in the center. Went down there, and nothing had touched the corn, but I started raking the leaves back, and there's two knuckle prints in the dirt. And they, the fingers were at least an inch wide.
It's a big boy or girl. I don't want to
right.
assume it's gender.
Exactly. But then I found a spot that all the brush had been pushed over to the bottom of the hill. All of it. It had been piled. Nobody got in those woods. Nobody was doing any tree cutting or anything, but all the brush was piled up against the bottom of the hill. So I started walking around it, and I started noticing these flat spots, and they were kind of oval-shaped all around that brush. So I skirted the outside of it, and it went up to the top of the hill. And I looked down, and they had taken brush and a couple of logs and made a funnel. And my only guess is they were using it to trap deer, because I did find deer tracks in it.
Funnel them through to a kill area.
Yeah, I'm thinking they piled the brush down to the bottom so the deer couldn't get out and they could get them.
Now, Gene, what do you think about this chronic wasting disease that's in deer? We may have touched on this last weekend.
We did briefly.
But there's a chronic wasting disease in the deer in Tennessee right now. What do you think that
mm-hmm.
will do to the Bigfoots and potentially Dogman's food supply? How that'll affect them? Will it cause them to be more aggressive and hungry if their food supply starts to diminish, or do you
I'm
think
sure
they'll turn to alternate foods? Or
well, they are omnivores, so they've got several different, you know, food choices, which, you know, around here they've got squirrels and rabbits. They've got dogs and chickens.
Around your area, they got a lot of fish because there's a lot of stream.
Right. But, like around here, like I said, here, just at our place, you know, we've got deer that frequent the area. They come through all the time. I've jumped them just walking out in the backyard. And as far as they're saying that the original chronic wasting disease wouldn't affect humans, well, now they're calling, there's something going on they're calling zombie deer.
Yeah,
and well,
it's a wasting disease. It seems to almost be on steroids.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, they walk around like they're in a daze. Because
yeah,
the
they eat their own feces and urine.
Yep, and they're saying now it could possibly infect humans.
Yes, did you know that for the first time ever, scientists has found a deer eating a dead human body?
Really?
Yeah, I just read that the other day.
I know.
First one ever observed eating, like, scavenging.
Well, I did see a video of a rabbit eating another animal.
That's pretty bizarre. Elijah, if this wasting disease gets out of hand, you know, I wonder about LBL. There's not a whole lot of food sources to choose from there.
No,
they're very prevalent.
Maybe at the deer and the
buffalo. So I wonder
if it'll
make more activity. I suppose it could.
they may realize that there's something wrong with it and look for different food sources.
Well, I know they've got
imagine a Bigfoot or a dog man or something like that. Did you ever see that movie from the 70s, Prophecy, where it had that deformed bear that was poisoned from methyl mercury? Imagine something that big, like a Bigfoot or dog man, getting a disease and going mad. You'd have a nightmare on your hands.
Absolutely. It'd make the legend of Boggy Creek look like Sesame Street.
Yes, it would.
Yeah, that's...
Go ahead. I was just going to say, in the last few minutes of the show... In the last few minutes of the show, we got about 6 minutes, 30 seconds left. If there's anybody out there listening who wants to call in and ask Gene any questions, that number is 516-418-5453. And again, that's 516-418-5453, and we'll pass it through to him. Go ahead, Gene.
We always encourage people to call in and talk to our guests. Elijah, we need to start giving that number earlier in the show.
Okay.
No, I was just going to touch on a lot of times around here, we hear, sometimes it's 2 or 3 in the morning, we'll hear gunshots.
Kind of got to wonder, don't you?
My next door neighbor over here, I've heard him shoot 3 or 4 times real late at night. And one night it sounded like a cannon going off. I don't know what they were shooting, but it was major. And they shot twice. So, I mean, this whole area back through here behind us, it's a natural foam. And it goes for miles. I mean, it comes out in the next town. That's how long it is. And they can travel that.
What's the big green belt?
Yeah, they can travel that completely unseen. No problem. And I've actually walked the entire thing. And
do you have any current research you're doing, Gene?
Well, I'm getting ready to start back up. We've had a lot going on. We just got back from Texas, and we've got a lot that's been going on. But it being spring, usually here in East Tennessee especially, it seems like they're more active during the spring and fall. I'm getting ready to start doing some stuff around here, trying a couple of experiments, you know, to see if anything, quote unquote, takes the bait, and try to get a little bit more physical evidence.
Well, we certainly wish you luck with that. Are you
Absolutely.
And Scott still doing any research together, or have you had opportunity lately?
Well, we're trying to get it synchronized. We're trying to get it set up to where we can both go out to the Carter farm and spend a day. We've already gotten permission to go. We just have to, you know, get a date set to actually get out there and do what we need to do.
Now, Gene, I'd like to come over with you and let's maybe camp and spend one night there or something.
It's a possibility. I'd have to speak to the landowner, but, I mean,
right.
He's the one that he asked Janice's sister to get in touch with me, and if I could come over, you know, he'd walk me around the place. So that's something that I'm looking forward to, and I could talk to him about it then. I want to try to make that happen at least within the next couple of months.
Well, nice. Well, I hope you get to really get out there and shake things up again.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I've been out of it for a while, but, you know, it's something that never leaves you. You've either got it or you don't. That once
yeah,
the bug
you,
bites
if you get it in your blood and you don't have access to it, man, it's a terrible feeling.
Yes, it is. And that's one thing I was happy about, because I was living in downtown Knoxville. I mean, now you do see enough wildlife there, but that's all human form. But moving back down here to the country and then this stuff starting, I'm like, yep, here we go. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting back into it. I really want to get back down there and get out in the field with you guys for sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And
I would be totally psyched about that.
And I was talking to Nathan the other day. He's wanting to try to get down here possibly within the next month or so. He's expressed interest about spending a night or two here at my place and, you know, seeing what happens.
Well, I hope you guys get a huge amount of activity.
Well, I mean, like I said, you know, this is the first time that something's came up and smacked the house. I've been here, gosh, almost 2 years, and it's the first time anything's ever hit the house. But it was a heavy hit, I know that much. I've not been able to find any damage. It sounds more like they're hitting the doors, whatever it is.
Hey,
but
Dan, I'm sorry to cut you off, but we got about 30 seconds left, and after that
okay.
I'll just cut you off altogether. So I wanted to thank
all
you
right.
very much for being on our show. Hopefully we'll have you again sometime. And you
absolutely,
got anything to add, Pop?
Well, if anybody has
any final words to Gene.
If anybody has any questions that they can get to call in, you know, you can email me at petredneck@gmail.com or look me up on Facebook under Gene McCauley.
Excellent, Gene. Thank you again. And to everybody out there, until next time, you'll stay groovy, baby.
Oh, yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
Oh, and next week we're going to have George Workman from one of the Dogman sites is going to be our guest.
He runs the Bigfoot
okay,
and Dogman website. So that'll be a good time.
Yep. It
all
right. Like
again, thank you for being here, Gene. Thank you, Elijah. And like I said, stay groovy, guys.
All right.
Stay groovy.
See you soon.